With the debate about same-sex marriage in full swing in Australia, it also prompts the question of what makes a family? Is it a man and a woman? Is it biological children? Or something much broader than that? Although lots of same-sex couples act as foster parents around the country, in a number of states, the laws were only recently changed to allow them to adopt children. But in the Northern Territory, it's still illegal. The adoption laws in the NT only allow married men and women, or couples married under traditional Indigenous cultural laws, to legally adopt children. In a moment, we'll hear from Nat McDowell, who, along with her partner, has been a foster carer in Darwin for many years, but would like to be able to adopt children. First, though, let's meet Sean Douglas Galley. He and his partner campaigned for the South Australian laws to change, something that did happen and took effect earlier this year. He joins us now from Adelaide. Now, Sean, you and your partner decided to emigrate from the UK with your two sons in 2013. Tell us what happened just before you were due to leave for Australia.
Hello, Amanda. Yes, so we, my husband and I should say, have been together for 15 years in a committed relationship, and we adopted the boys in 2011 and then 2012. My husband is a psychiatrist and got an employment opportunity here in Adelaide. So we started the process of emigrating, and, you know, as any parent would do, the thought of being able to offer the boys a better lifestyle.
An Adelaide lifestyle.
Absolutely, better opportunities. So we followed that process through over a number of years, and 24 hours before we were due to leave the United Kingdom, we had a correspondence from the immigration department to say that our visa had been suspended or revoked, if you like, pending further investigation into the validity of the boys' adoptions. And what transpired, we didn't know at the time, was that they had not had a case of a same-sex couple with adopted children coming to South Australia.
And in fact, in South Australia at that time, it was illegal for same-sex couples to adopt children.
It was illegal, yes.
Yeah. So how stressful was that for you and your family at the time?
Oh, look, you know, it was stressful. It was a period of change when newly adopted children come to you. You know, there's always a period of settlement. So it was a stressful time, but we managed to, you know, work through that as a family. We entered the country after 6 weeks in limbo.
Yes, and what happened? How did that sort itself out?
So we, you know, that was just continual conversations with the immigration department. Our social work department in England had to get involved and write statements to the effect that the adoptions were valid, even though they'd had all the court documents, relevant paperwork. I think they were just very nervous about, as I said, a same-sex couple coming into the country with adopted children. Just never happened before in South Australia.
Well, what did happen was that you then became quite active in campaigning for the adoption laws in South Australia to change, and that was done successfully, and the change to the law took effect in February this year. How important was it for you personally to see that happen?
I think as human beings, we all want acceptance. We want acceptance within our communities, within our families, within our, you know, networks that go beyond that. And it was about acceptance. We know as a same-sex family that we parent our children in exactly the same way. You know, they have a stable, loving home environment. So it was very important that we were accepted and that we were recognised as a family. Having been recognised in the United Kingdom, you know, and now seeing Adelaide as our future home, the idea that the boys would grow up contributing to a community where they weren't recognised was a problem for us. So, yeah, that was the motivation.
Well, Queensland also followed suit and has passed laws to allow same-sex couples to adopt. And that now does leave the Northern Territory the last remaining jurisdiction in Australia that hasn't yet changed its laws. Although a spokesperson for the NT government has told us that it's planning to introduce legislation to Parliament to amend the Act, hopefully by the end of this year. Nat McDowell in Darwin, tell us first of all about why you and your partner decided to become foster carers.
Well, I've been in the Northern Territory with my partner for 12 years, and we were thinking of a way that we could have children that we could also give back to our community, and that's when we become foster carers. And what we found from that journey is that looking after the children in the care in the Northern Territory is such a joy. And we have one child in our care who's been in our care since she was 7, and she's now 15, and she's very much a part of our family.
Tell us about how she came into your care.
Well, when she first came into our care, we got a call from the department to ask if we could look after this girl. We were told that she had special needs, she had a developmental delay. From the tone of the conversation, I could tell that they were getting a little bit desperate to place this child. And we were asked if we could look after her for 6 months. So we did that. And then she blossomed. She really blossomed in our care. She was able to do things she'd never done before, pour her own water, walk in the shopping centre without holding hands. Her teachers were amazed. So they asked if we could look after her long term.
And do you consider her your daughter, Nat, even though the law doesn't allow you to legally adopt her?
Absolutely, yeah, definitely. In the community, when I'm meeting people, I will introduce her as my daughter without even second thinking it. She is my daughter, she is our daughter, and both her biological parents have passed away, so she very much considers us her parents as well. I remember one day when she just came up to us, because originally she called my partner Jory and myself Nat, and I remember one day when she must have been like around 9, she'd been living with us for 2 years, I'm going to call you Mum now. And from then on it was Mum and Nat and Mama Jory that she decided to call us. Yeah, so definitely she sees us as parents and we see her as a daughter.
But what does it mean to you in a practical sense for your family that she's your foster daughter and not adopted? Does that put restrictions on you?
Yes, definitely. So if we, like the travel, I'm not able to travel overseas with our girl. Well, we can.
Why is that?
Because we would have to have passports. That's just something that we haven't been able to get. We've been asking for many years for the department to have a passport for our girl, but it just hasn't happened. So for our holidays, we take our holidays in Australia. So we've been to Uluru together as a family, and we could put our child with another foster family and then, you know, my partner and I go overseas, but we would just never do that. So we take our families within Australia. We've been to Tasmania, Queensland, you know, so that is very restricting. And then there's just the day-to-day stuff, like when we're opening her bank account or getting her Medicare card. It's just not as easy as it would be.
And also, presumably, you're sort of under the eye of government department as foster carers, is that right?
Sure. Yeah, that would definitely be correct. They have, and it makes sense, they need to see the children every month, so that is quite annoying for ourselves and our daughter. But at the same time, I can understand why they want to check in. And there has been some cases where foster carers might be, you know, making a joke with the child saying, oh, you know, I'll throw you into the garbage bin or whatever they happen to say. And that has become an allegation. And then the foster carers get investigated, and that's just something that foster carers have to live with day to day.
So Nat, how does it make you feel to have the option of adopting the now 15-year-old girl you consider your daughter closed off to you as a family?
It's extremely unfair. It is extremely unfair. We have seen within our girl's classroom, another boy who was in care, who's been in care for quite a long time, and their family was offered to adopt him. That hasn't been the case for us. There has never been an option. It's never been talked about that we would be able to adopt our girl. So, it's unfair. But we handle it within our own family so that our girl's not affected, because often what can happen is it affects the child. It's the permanency, the love in a family. it just doesn't feel like you're going to be there for long term, forever. They have the fear that what if I get taken away? What if I get put with another foster family?
So are you able to shield your daughter from that?
Definitely we do as much as we can, but a lot of the children in care, if they've been in a long-term family, they still have that fear. What if I muck up and, you know, I have a tantrum and they think I don't want to stay here and I have to go into another family, and, you know, they just don't have that feeling of permanency within a family that they're entitled to.
Renee Carter joins us now too. She's the CEO of Adopt Change. This is an organisation that was founded by the actress Deborah Lee Furness, and it pushes for greater access to adoptions in Australia for children and parents. And Renee, something to acknowledge, I think, is that adoption is very difficult in Australia, whatever sort of couple you are. What are the adoption options available to couples in Australia at the moment?
Hi, Amanda. It is extremely difficult to adopt in Australia. So while we have a child protection crisis and we have over 30,000 children who have been living away from birth parents for over 2 years and are unlikely to return home, by way of contrast, there were less than 200 adoptions of Australian children last year. And a number of those are via step parents. So as Nat spoke about, providing permanency to a child is critical, particularly when they've been through multiple traumas. And yet we see countless foster parents unable to adopt the child in their care that very much sees them as their parents.
What's the situation for same-sex couples in Australia with overseas adoption, inter-country adoption?
So inter-country adoption is a little more complex because, as well as the legislation in each jurisdiction here and what they will allow, there is the sending country criteria. So we have partner agreements with a small number of countries.
How many countries?
It's 13. Mm-hmm. And then my understanding is I think only South Africa allows same-sex couples to adopt.
Right. So the other 12 countries don't.
Yes, that's right. So it's quite limited in terms of inter-country adoption. So there were 82 in Australia last year, inter-country adoptions.
Any same-sex adoptions with children coming from South Africa?
I am not sure of that figure off the top of my head, actually. No. But, yeah, I mean, you can see from the figures they're very low.
Yeah. Sean Douglas-Galley, how difficult is it then for same-sex couples who want a family to not have this option of overseas adoption?
I think it all but closes it off. And I think something we need to start talking about is, you know, and I'm sure Renee would know more about this, is the age of children, you know, the fact that children do need permanency. And I know in certainly in England, they're moving to a system whereby, you know, people will be approved as adopters, as foster carers, with the view to go on and adopt those relinquished babies that they have with them so that they have that permanence. For one of our sons, he had the experience of having 5 separate placements at the age of 15 months. And, you know, that leaves a trail of trauma, as we refer to it. And it's something that needs to be looked at in this country.
Well, Sean, your own children have what's called open adoption, I think. Tell us what that is, what that means.
So we met with both sets of birth parents. People often say to me, oh, the boys don't have a mother. They do have a mother. They have a birth mother. But because of unfortunate circumstances, it wasn't safe for the boys to be left in those situations. We entered into a fair and just system in the United Kingdom, whereby myself and my husband were deemed to be the safest and best placement for our boys to grow up in that permanence, to have a loving home and to have the best opportunities that they can. So, yes, you know, it's again, the system here needs to mature in Australia.
Do your sons know their birth parents then?
So as part of the open adoption, what we did was we met the birth parents, we had an agreement, and we do have an agreement that we will correspond with them on a yearly basis. So we write letters. One of my sons is old enough now to write those on his own. We don't always get a response. And again, you have to manage that within your own family, because that could be seen as a rejection for the child. But we try to, you know, support our sons so that they have emotional intelligence around that, because it, again, often what you find is those birth families fall into a cyclical cycle of going back into, and I'm going, you know, I will say, back into drugs and whatever unfortunate circumstances they may have in their life. So yes, whilst open adoption is fantastic, and it's something that needs to be nurtured, it doesn't always work in the way that it's presented at the time you adopt.
Nevertheless, has it been important for you, for your children, well, for any children who are adopted, to have this link available to them with their birth parents, if they are alive?
It is, absolutely. And I don't think that's anything that should be seen as a negative thing. I think absolutely it's a positive thing. It gives our boys a link into their birth families, into their biological history. It's not my husband's right. It's not my right to try and sever those links. Yes, we adopted our boys, but we adopted their biology. We adopted their history. And we know that as adoptive parents, we have a responsibility to support them to have the best understanding about what happened and why it happened, and to not have judgment around that, because ultimately one day, the day will come where they make the decision to either go and find their birth family or not. And again, that will be a decision that they take.
Mm. Renee Carter, you've made the point that it's not easy in Australia for any couples to adopt children, even though there are plenty of children in care. Mm. What would shift attitudes in Australia about adoption overall, do you think?
Look, I think there's a lot of hurt from past practices in Australia with forced adoptions and closed adoptions. And so, as Sean was talking about, the importance of openness in adoption is critical. So I think education and having people understand, firstly, that we practice a different type of adoption now that does respect and keep links to birth family and understanding of identity and heritage, but also that we do need to look at what the situation is for children as an option, because ultimately we have a huge number of children that are spending on average 12 and a half years in out-of-home care, and the negative life outcomes for them are huge. So larger instances of poor health, low education, early pregnancy, time spending in homelessness. So all of these things are a terrible option. And really, permanency provides them with the chance to avoid that.
Well, Renee, there are, of course, and I think you're possibly alluding to these strong historical reasons why we're wary of adoption in this country. I'm specifically thinking of the stolen generations.
Yes.
That's still so raw for many people. So there does remain a kind of case to be cautious around adoption, surely, to make it done in the right way.
Yes, it has to be done absolutely ethically. There has to be due diligence. But we do need to listen to the voice of children in this. And often we hear of families that that have been established for a long time through foster care, for example, and children experience a very real need to have a true sense of security and belonging. When you've moved 10 times, 20 times from family to family, you do want to know that this is your permanent family, and adoption does offer that.
Well, Nat McDowell, would you like to see greater avenues for adoption for both straight and same-sex couples in the Northern Territory, albeit taking into account the sort of cultural sensitivities around that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would benefit the children and the families if they are able to adopt their children that they've had in long-term care in their families. It would offer the kind of permanency that the families and the children deserve. And as far as, you know, having that history and that heritage goes, there are things that you can do to include the whatever cultural background that the children that come to you have, you know, including books that come into your family, going to cultural, significant cultural events, learning the first language of biological children. All these things are things that we've done within our family for the children that come into our care. And at the same time, that shouldn't stop us from having permanency within families.
Nat McDowell is a foster parent in Darwin, at this point of time still unable with her partner to adopt children because it's still not legal for same-sex couples in the Northern Territory to do so, although it does look like there'll be some movement on that front later in the year. Nat, great to talk to you. Thank you.
Thanks, Amanda.
And Sean Douglas Galley is a parent from Adelaide. He has two adopted sons with his partner, Blue. And Sean's one of those who campaigned for a change to the Adoption Act in South Australia that took effect earlier this year. Thanks, Sean.
Thank you, Amanda.
And Renee Carter is the CEO of Adopt Change. It's an organisation that advocates for greater access to adoption all around Australia for children and parents. And thanks to you, Renee.
Thanks, Amanda.